I'm with Rowie Dillon from Rowie's Cakes. Firstly, welcome Rowie to my series of informal chats.
Yep.
We've just had a tour of your fantastic facility where Rowie's Cakes are made. Thank you for that, just firstly.
Oh, that's all right.
Can we go right back to where your love of food developed?
Oh, wow. Probably as a child, I used to cook in front of this toffee in front of the stove with my sister, and we'd pretend we'd be Margaret and Bernard. And then I'd sort of, you know, make wacky soups and things like that in school holidays. My mum was very much a comfort food cook.
Mm. And she was obviously an influence on your cooking?
Yeah, she was, but instead of, like, reading... I was never one for reading novels or studying too much,
mm-hmm.
if that makes any sense. I did a major in three-unit art and English and ancient history, so I sort of... I would never necessarily pick up novels, but I'd pick up cookbooks.
Mm. What point did you realise you had a food intolerance? When did that become a...
I had about nearly 20 years ago, I couldn't swallow properly. And I thought to myself, my God, my eyes look like they're popping out of my head. I can't swallow properly. What's going on? So I went to the doctor and he said, looks like you've got glandular fever. And I thought, I haven't got glandular fever. So I actually thought to myself, I've got to investigate this. So I went to straight to a specialist, and the specialist just came out and looked at me and just said, you have a goiter, like a tumour in your neck. And I went, really? And so within 48 hours I was in hospital and I had a thyroidectomy. And during that period of pretending that I was Frankenstein and not trying to twist my neck so I'd get a really big scar, I sort of looked into healing foods and why, and then looked at what I was eating and how I'd digest it and how I'd feel and all of that kind of thing, and realised that I need to get my whole dietary system sorted out because I'm allergic to a shitload of stuff. So I started doing that through a naturopath at first because I don't believe it says as much as she loves a glass of wine.
Don't we all?
I don't believe in headache tablets, or I just don't get into it. So I try and investigate things naturally, and then if I have to go to a doctor, I'll go to a doctor. So that's exactly what I did to get my diagnosis of my own intolerances. So I'm allergic to a lot of preservatives, in particular sulfur dioxide, which is why I sort of, you know, only occasionally will have a glass of champagne. And then it just means I've got to stick with the imported, really. So, and a lot of preservative that's placed in food, as well as dairy, although I do love my ice cream. So you can sort of, you know, you can eat your way around your intolerances as I've done through the years. But basically that's sort of how I discovered that I was intolerant and allergic to a lot of things. But it also, being I used to be in advertising and used to be a TV producer, I never actually thought that I would necessarily, or 20 odd years ago, I never thought that I'd be sitting here with my own factory of 27 staff. It just sort of, about 14 years ago, I came up with an idea, and that's how it is.
I was at lunch that you kindly invited to me about a month ago, and you were cooking, and there were four chefs of pretty considerable standing in Sydney, and you cooked a fantastic savoury meal for us. So that's another side to your bow that people aren't aware of, because we all think of you as pastry and baking, but it was just a fantastic meal that day. So you enjoy savoury cooking
you,
as well?
Dave. Yeah, I do. It's sort of like a lot of my friends, and you would know from that day, a lot of my friends that come to my house for lunch or dinner, I mean, I may be known for my sweet treats, but you can basically sort of, you know, my entertaining is sort of, it's a bit like a, you know, a religious culmination of everything that's in my head coming out onto the plate. I don't know. People go speechless.
Having a little sneak peek of your cookbooks, you mentioned cookbooks earlier, it's a very wide cross-section of chefs, you know, from classical cooking right through to more sort of adventurous cooking. Can you tell us a little about a few chefs that have influenced you or been an inspiration to you?
Okay. So I give myself goals when I attain things within the business, to set out and seek, you know, these people so I can meet them, because I want to tell them that they've inspired me. And one of those people would be Dan Leppard, who I finally met at the Cake, Bacon, Sweet show. And because we're both redheads, whether or not it comes out of the bottle or not, we got on famously. That was amazing. About 8 years ago, I went to Perth for the gluten-free expo, and I said on my way back, I'm going to stop in on Adelaide through the smell of an oily rag, and I'm going to go and visit Maggie Beer. So I made an appointment. I got there, and she took me out the front, and she said, okay, why are you here? Roey, why are you here? I said, I'm just about to start with Qantas and I want to have my product in Woolworths, and you actually inspire me. She's inspiring, and I've become really good friends with Maggie since that day. We actually are quite sort of similar. I'm good friends with her daughters now as well. So Maggie's inspired me. The other person who is, I suppose, she's like the Jesus of food. Would have to be Jamie Oliver. If anybody's taught, if anyone within the industry has taught me to just go for it and believe, it'd be him.
Well, I notice you're a very passionate, enthusiastic person. You have a lot of positive energy surrounding you, and you sort of those values I picked up on when I first met you. And is that something that sort of you picked up from Jamie as well, that his energy and drive?
Yeah, possibly from him, but also from myself. I don't deal with minuses. I don't live in that zone. So I don't you can't achieve something if you're minus. You've got to operate plus. And sometimes it's very hard to do that. So it's like if I say, you know, in the year 2000, I'm going to open a cake business and it's going to be Australia's gluten-free Sara Lee. I know that that might take 15 to 20 years, but by Jesus, I'll get there. I'll just chart that course to sort of get to that spot. And in order to do that, you've actually got to live for now, today, and tomorrow. Because if you are existing in a minus, you're not forward. How can you come up with solutions if you're beating yourself up all the time?
Have you had any mentors along the way, or has it been a very self-driven journey?
I have had indirect mentors and direct mentors. I remember when I first started Roey's Cakes, that was in the days of the explosion of the Byron Bay Cookie Company and Lucan and May Biscuits. And I remember going down to Lucan and May with crates and crates and crates of cakes and trying to make an appointment to see Cindy Lucan. And I had crates of cakes. I've been baking all night. I could hardly open my eyes. They were stinging. I was that tired. And I was standing out there in the heat, and she was having a meeting and didn't realise that I was outside. And then she came outside and apologised and went in and saw the cakes. And then one night I'm at Roey's Cakes in Woolloomooloo a couple of months later, and I'm, you know, hosing down in my apron, in my pyjamas, and there's a knock on the window. Hi, Roey, it's Cindy. So Cindy's now one of my best friends. She's great. She was really inspiring when I sort of started off. There's also a few people within the industry that have with a real business sense that have really helped me. Philip Blanco, who has worked for Gloria Jeans, etc., now sort of is involved with Mad Mex and Snag Stand and all of that kind of thing. He's been really inspiring to actually, you know, help me put some spreadsheet financial structure within the business, rather than just, you know, me creatively shooting from the hip and going, oh, yeah, $2 seems all right. So he sort of showed me how to do that, and that was many years ago, and he's a great friend today and is very proud of what I've achieved through his sort of guidance. And then it's also you read and you absorb and you see different people achieve different things, and you can see or hear their mistakes and hear the good things that have happened to them as well, and you think, okay, that's actually a really good idea, I could actually use that to do X, and that helps you get to the next level. I also did some business coaching about 5 years ago, and I did that for a year, and that was fantastic. That really enabled me to hone in on my leadership skills and understand that I was not a bad leader at all.
Mm. Can you take us back to 2000, and there was an incident with a pot-bellied stove that started all this or triggered it or was a catalyst for how it all began. Can you take us back to 2000, just tell us how Rowie's Cakes, where the dream came from, how it became?
Yeah. So I lived in Brisbane then, Dane. And I came down to Sydney for the Bledisloe Cup. So we're dancing around, as you do, after the Cup, and we're dancing around to George Michael, and all of a sudden I did a twirl and I landed into a bucket of wood beside a potbelly stove. And I decided to... Because you know how when you do something like that, you're embarrassed, your legs are in the air, and you know what, I'm like high heels, the whole kit and caboodle. So I put my right hand down on top of the potbelly stove to lift myself out of the pot. And then I used... Immediately knowing what I'd done to get third-degree burns, I used my left hand to pull it off. So I got second-degree burns to my left and third-degree burns to my right. So I was a traffic manager in an advertising agency in Brizzy then. And I went to Royal North Shore Hospital. The care was just say... I could not wait to get out of Sydney and get up to Brisbane to the hospital. So my sister is in the medical industry, so I got on a plane with my arms all bandaged, sitting like this, and they give me a bloody banana, and I said, hello, I can't use my hands. So then, went back up to Brisbane, went straight to the hospital, and it's fascinating what happens with your hands, with flesh. There was no flesh on my hands. So these hands have all regenerated through photosynthesis and burns cream. And while I was doing all of that, you know, not being able to use my hands and having to have a couple of months off work, which my boss wasn't very happy about, I had a dictaphone in those days. I had a little tape recorder, and because I couldn't draw or anything like that. I mean, I could barely put my jeans on. My sister would have to come and help me get dressed in the morning. Then we'd go to the hospital to get my burn debrided. And then I'd come back. So I actually used a tape recorder and I wrote a story about the kitchen that baked wheat, yeast, gluten and dairy-free. I didn't know that it'd be called Rowie's Cakes. And I talked to a friend of mine in business and he said, well, actually, kiddo, you should do those numbers. I thought, oh, okay, all right. Well, how much? And at that stage, I was only thinking of 26-centimetre cakes. So then I started thinking of individuals and I did the numbers. I got a job in Sydney, left my job in Brisbane, came down here. Then September 11 happened. And during that period, I was still writing. I could now use my hands. I was still writing the story about the kitchen that baked wheat, yeast, gluten and dairy-free, and then it became Rowie's Cakes, and I'd experimented with my different flavours and all of that kind of thing. I'd taken out some other stupid little life insurance policy so I could do baking, and I'd found some kitchen space in the McHugh Hotel at night time in Ultimo, but I hadn't started using it yet. And then September 11 happened. So September 11 happened, and not long after, and when I went into work after September 11, I said to one of the people that I worked with, because they knew that I, the IT guy, I'd get him to download some information off my computer that I'd do in my lunch hour. And I turned around to Daniel and I said, Daniel, do you think that they'll still eat cake? And he said, yes, of course they will. So not long after that, I was made redundant. And my boss said to me, oh, do you want us to ship you back to Brisbane and pay for all of that? Or do you want to stay for 2 months or find another job or stay for a month? I said, no, just give me the check. I'm gone. So, so I left that day. I drove straight to Balmoral Beach. I walked into the water right up to here, threw my sunglasses in the air and screamed and drove to Rydalmere. And the following day, drove to Rydalmere, and I actually bought this cake box. This physical actual cake box, which is very special. And it looks a bit old now, but I came home and I cut an R out of it, as you can see. And yeah, started baking cakes. So that was 13 years ago.
That's what I call an epiphany. You've published a book called Indulge.
Yep.
Can you tell us a little bit about that and how much work went into for that book to become reality?
So Indulge is like a culmination of everything that is... it kind of proves to the person who is gluten intolerant or allergic that it is possible to... you know, for naughty tasting treats and desserts to be good for you, and that, yeah, you can bump bland out of gluten-free forever. So it's about 3 years' work. So and once you sort of, HarperCollins and my publisher, and once you sort of surround yourself with a really like-minded team, with key people that can help you with styling, food preparation, etc., and the photographer. I mean, I remember meeting Ben many moons ago when we did a shoot for a magazine at Rowie's Cakes from Woolloomooloo. I said, when I do my cookbook, will you be my photographer? And he said, yes, of course I will. So now that I've written cookbook number 2 and going to publish that, I'm actually really excited, because you actually, as you go along, you learn. I mean, we would do... I'm not someone who to go into a shoot with 25 napkins and 15 forks. You actually, all you really need is the shot, and if you know what your horizon and your background is, and that's probably the beauty of my television and film production background, if you know what it is, save time, save money, do 11 shots a day, because reality is it's all about the food. That's what a cookbook's about. It's not about the fork.
From the perspective of someone who's been fortunate enough not to have any food intolerances to date, can you tell us how it changes your perspective on food?
Okay. I'm an exception, because I eat the way that I eat because that's my way of life. But if you deal with... and a lot of chefs would know through their... clientele bantering with all their specialty dietary requirements, it can feel like some of, and so I deal with people like this every day, some of my customers feel like they've been struck down by a life of culinary boredom, and they actually are fearful of food. And that sort of, I mean, if you think about the sense of fear, that sort of builds resentment, and also builds anger. So that's why a lot of people refer to people who are gluten as a gluten-free banshee over there. You know? So it's sort of, you just got to be aware of that so you can actually educate. And I believe that as sort of a bit of a pioneer as such with my business, is I actually have had the ability to educate through what I do, like what I'm doing at Cake Bake and Sweet Show with the science of flowers, talking to people about how the different flowers work, because it's not rocket science.
You've clearly identified a niche in the market, but And but to me, it seems more than just a marketing opportunity. You're very driven, almost determined to make taste a point of difference for your customers. That's a very important part of it. Can you tell us a bit about that?
If you're a food business, you're nothing without taste.
Mm.
So how are people not going to buy it? Mm. It's like when I was touring you through the factory a little while ago. And like our values, we believe that it is possible for naughty tasting cakes and desserts to be good for you. But we also believe in, you know, as much as you want to be profitable and, you know, have a business that is profitable, we believe in damn fine ingredients and ethical production. You can't just put 6,000 cakes through a flow wrapper and toss them from one end of the room to the other. It doesn't work like that. It is actually all about the flavour of the food, but it's also about the juxtaposition of flavour. Like, everything is different in its own tone and texture, and that's very important to the palate.
We were talking earlier about someone who told you that you're a pioneer for this, which you are. How does that sit with you? Because the feedback from people sometimes when you're caught within your own product, you may not see that sometimes, but how does that almost legacy sit with you?
I'm honoured because it's, in a lot of ways, it's, sometimes you don't realise the power of your own creativity, and for that ability and attribute that I have, I'm very honoured. I am a pioneer in the gluten-free arena, and so is the business. And I'm really, really grateful because I think it sort of stands us on our own. But in saying all of that, Dane, you know what I'm like. I don't believe in competition, so I'll always be that sort of... Rowie's Cakes will always be what it is regardless. I wouldn't have it any other way, but I am honoured because we've paved the way for people who are allergic and intolerant to enjoy great tasting food. Mm.
You spoke earlier about the Cake, Bacon, Sweet Show, for which you've been made an ambassador. Could you talk a little bit about, from the inside, what that show... It was the first show in Sydney, and there's going to be one in Melbourne coming up next...
So the first weekend in October in Melbourne, and it's a great show. I actually have done a lot of trade shows where we've done celebrity chef stages and demos and all of that, and Rowie's Cakes is exhibited and all of that kind of stuff. I've never, ever been to a show where there's so many happy people in one room. It was really great in Sydney because everybody wanted to be there and everybody wanted to learn. That was the best thing. So, and as I said previously, it's cake. So whether or not they're gluten-free cakes or, you know, Duff Goldman's cakes or whatever, Adriano Zumbo's cakes, we're talking cakes, so we're talking happy. So everybody was really, really happy. And the education side of it blew me away, how much people really wanted to learn.
For me, I mean, I couldn't believe, firstly, how seamless it went for its first year. And secondly, just on that education point of view, that there's that amazing opportunity for you to connect with maybe a young person there who's thinking of doing, you know, might be of getting involved in the industry. And that must be very gratifying for yourself, that because you did demonstrations at the show. Does that sit well with you, that you may have this opportunity to influence someone out there who's just looking for that little spark or push?
Yeah, if you can... And I apply this to with my staff as well. Lead with inspiration and be... if you can see somebody has a spark in their eye and they actually want to be the world's best decorator, tell them where to go. Get them to shoot for the stars. If they're floundering and they don't know where to go, they won't have that sparkle. But if you can lead with guidance, because you can see that sort of flair, that's an amazing attribute to have as an individual, and to be able to give that to the next generation of people within your industry, isn't that kind of what we're here for as well?
Yes, true. And speaking to Duff and Eric at the show, they were very respectful of the local talent here in pastry and baking, and I know Duff brought that up more than once, and that must be very gratifying to know that you're respected, or our industry here is respected by the peers internationally.
Yeah, we've got a lot of opportunity in Australia, and we do not realise it. That's, fancy me, ex-TV producer come traffic manager, having 27 staff in a bakery that produces thousands of cakes a day. I wouldn't have had the opportunity to be here had we not been, I suppose, if I was living in France, it'd be different. I'm living in Australia and I'm selling cake and there's a lot of opportunity, except the rising cost of labour. But
just speaking of labour, can you tell us about some of the unique qualities you look for when employing someone to work with Roey's Cakes? Because it's a very very unique environment, where it's a very creative environment. Can you tell us a little bit of what you look for in a person?
I look for... it's like, you know how when you go to an amusement park and you get on a ride and they've got the little carriages? Okay, so I want people on my carriage. Mm. So it's the same with my customers. You want to have people who are enrolled in your business that are going to deposit into your future. So that, and how you do that is you can't just rely on that person to walk in the door. They need to be trained effectively, but they also need to listen to your story and understand where you want to be so they can actually become part of the business's future.
So they're they're an ambassador for the product too, and yeah. you rely...
And as I say to my staff when I interview them, normally I have group interviews and we siphon them down, you know. Are you on holiday visa? Okay, if you're on holiday visa, see you later, sayonara. And when I'm in the interview, I just sort of say, okay, well, I'll give you my best, but I'll also give you my worst. Mm. And... If you are loyal to the business and believe in the business's future, you will have a role in the business for a very long time. I don't want to invest time in my future if you're not prepared to invest time in the business.
I noticed we were talking about earlier about your product, and what I've sensed in the products that I've tasted from the range is that you have a very intuitive understanding of balance, and I often think with chefs that's not, it's something that's very hard to attain. I think it's a bit of a gift you either have, it's very hard to teach or pass on, but you do have that gift of balance in your products. And can you tell us a little bit about that side of things?
It's like what I was saying before, you know, when you open your, you know, when you're a child and you'd open your Quality Street box of chocolates, and you'd open that and you'd look at the chocolates and you go, oh, and they have the picture and they go caramel and then strawberry, and you know, so when you open your box of Roey's Cakes, you want to go, oh, and you've got this like box of treats, but you want them all to be different in tone and texture and taste, so you're covering all bases of the palate, from a velvety kind of feeling right through that really delicate soft sponge. I think that's part of, for me, that's part of being artistic with what you're creating, to get that balance.
I was doing a little research for this interview, and I noticed that you use some quite unique flowers in your products that have the same accreditations that you standard you have yourself. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, we use a lot of... I use quinoa flour, quinoa flake. Those sort of Aztec grains are really, really nice. Amaranth. Because when you're sort of working with things that you've got to delete egg and, you know, delete dairy and all of that kind of thing, you really want to work with some flours that are going to be, A, give nutrition, but B, also give texture and sort of a roundness in flavour, because you've got, and you want them all to connect. That's why we use tapioca flour as well. So, and that's one of the things that I go through, like a bit of a nutty professor in my classroom talks at the Cake, Bake and Sweet Show. It is, I've always, with gluten-free, blended my own flours. I don't just go into a supermarket and pick up a White Wings gluten-free plain flour or gluten-free self-raising flour. For me, I've always think of baking and cooking from scratch and finding different flours with different textures. Like rice flour is very, very different to corn flour. Okay, we're going to do two different things. So one's going to create a really awesome biscuit and the other one's going to do a really nice sponge. So amaranth flour is fantastic in pasta and awesome in banana bread because it's like a Wettex. It just holds it all in. But if you try to make a flatbread with it, it's just not going to work.
Can you take us a little bit behind the creative process of from when you conceive of a product to when it actually hits the store or your own market stall? How long's involved in that from start to finish?
So say if I've got, like, we've just been through the next round of presentations for the next menus for the airlines. So I will probably know that about 4 months into it or 4 months prior. And I'm continually working on R&D and I'll know that I've got this meeting and it might be, you know, a month in advance I might go, a feather might drop and I'll go, oh my God, I've got that brief, I've cracked it. And then it might be, and more so much these days, you might be working on stuff and working on something like the Snappy Bites Wallies, this little product, trying to be really, really nutritious and tick all the boxes with Nutrition Australia and be free of wheat, yeast, gluten, dairy, egg, nuts and soy. So it might actually be that you might crack that the night before or the day before, but it's like a composer, like Mozart. You've got to get to that point of knowing that you've nailed the brief, and then it'll all just happen. And then you know 100% that you've given it, that you're happy to have your name on it, and that it works production-wise, it works timing-wise, price-wise, all of that kind of thing. So, but generally the cycle takes about 6 months.
Can you tell us a little bit, you just touched on doing some work for airlines. Can you tell us a little bit about, firstly, which airlines you're with and what you're providing to them, what products you're providing to them?
So we do all the special meals for Qantas. So when you... book your holiday or, you know, your flights with Qantas and you're gluten intolerant, dairy intolerant, vegan or whatever, generally you will receive a Rowie's cake or a Rowie's Yummy Rocky Road, or as of recently, rather than just being renowned for my sweet treats, we've got, as you've seen earlier, we've got our little Rowie's Toasties. So you've got Rowie's Popeye and Rowie's Rancheros, and they're doing really well. So they're flying domestically and internationally. We do special dietary requirements for Tiger Air, and we've been honoured to be part of the business class offering for everyone in Qantas with my Rowie's Moorish Chocolate and Raspberry Brownie and my Rowie's Passion Fruit Syrup Cake. Plus, we also do a little bit of stuff We're about to start with Virgin Airlines, and we do some stuff for Emirates as well. So it's great because that in itself, it's allowed me to have the brand there, but it's allowed the person flying to go, oh, Roey's Cakes, and then they make that connection in the supermarket with Woolworths. And more recently, by moving some of the stuff into the deli, it just means that you're not necessarily designated to that I'm a special meals person area. So, yeah, it's fantastic. What we do for in-flight catering is really awesome.
You've given me a 100% tour of the factory today, and I've looked at basically everything from in to going out to delivery to products coming in to even the packaging. It's a spotlessly clean environment, and you take the issue of cross-contamination very seriously. Can you tell us a bit about that and just that sense of duty of care in the actual production environment?
Yeah. Well, given that we're dealing with people with a lot of allergens, you've got to be... It's that kind of thing is crucial to the success of any production environment. Regardless of whether or not we're in the position where we're, you know, nut-free, egg-free or dairy-free. Each area has its own little section. So it's like, say if you're flying and you have that cake, Dane, and then all of a sudden you might find it says that there's no raspberries in it, but you go, oh, there's a raspberry in that cake. So you'll give that to someone on the airline. So they'll come back to me and they'll say, Roey, we found a raspberry in a cake, but it's not listed in the ingredient. So I should know from that box of cakes, traceability-wise, when that cake was baked, when it was dispatched, when it was stored in departures, and who was on the team and who was on the bowl that particular day and what time of day it went into the oven. Even 4 or 5 months after it's been baked. So that kind of thing with traceability and cross-contamination, that is, it's an integral part of the back-end structure of the business.
Can you, just earlier on, I was a bit naive in actually just trying to myself work out how many people worked here, and you've mentioned earlier on that 27 people work for Roey's Cakes, which is an amazing opportunity, not only for what you provide to the consumer, but in employment opportunity to people coming in. But I was quite astounded at some of the numbers you mentioned during the tour. Can you just run us through a bit of your basic numbers?
So, for instance, the cakes that we do for the airlines, we do about 6,000 of those a day. So we do about 2,000 sandwiches, and we're about to sort of toast it sandwiches in for little hot boxes. So we're about to ramp those up. Basically, Rocky Road production is, just under a pallet a day. So, yeah, and you want to, when you're divvying up the production and divvying up, what's going out or what's being produced, you've sort of got to be quite organised because we're not at 100% capacity yet either. So because we're building the second factory here and this will, or the second kitchen underneath this factory, so this will become savoury and the other one will remain sweet. That way you can increase your production a lot more as well. So plus I'm working on a secret squirrel savoury project at the moment, yet to be released.
Despite the scale, it still remains very artisan in nature, the product, and I was surprised when I actually just went for my own little sort of scouting missions at the price points, because the price points are quite incredible given the artisan nature of the product. How do you manage to maintain those given that you're sourcing very specific ingredients for your product, and how do you manage to keep that sort of real for the customer?
Okay, so you actually focus on productivity. And sometimes, in a lot of cases, I believe that the wrist is faster than the machine. So, as you would know, there's not that many machines down there, which is part of my ethical production belief. So then you can actually put your money into your ingredients and your labour versus your machine. and you'll find that that in turn will give you a fabulous product with less cost.
I noticed just reading on your website, you do export overseas, and can you tell us a bit about that?
Yeah, we do a little bit for cold storage in Singapore. With the ever-changing nature of the dollar, 1 minute your season of the month and the next minute you're sort of not. It's very interesting, and I'm working on a project with Singapore Airline Terminal Services at the moment, when I can try and fit that into my day. So, Singapore, your expat markets do quite well, but it's very hard with the export because they might order a couple of layers of a pallet or they might order three pallets. So you've just got to weigh up by the time it's delivered whether or not, although it's, you know, it's ex-Melbourne, I don't have to deliver it over there. You've just got to weigh up whether or not servicing that kind of customer is viable, rather so you either stay in this country or you go over there.
Your journey's quite incredibly inspiring one, and although pastry is slightly better represented with women in the industry, more so than the traditional savoury path, I'd imagine your story would be particularly inspiring to women looking to make their way in a fairly male-dominated industry. Can you reflect on how your journey may be important to other women wanting to sort of take that plunge and make the commitment into perhaps a product of their own or along that, or just working in the industry maybe as a pastry chef? Because I actually hear a lot of people actually even said to me, well, why aren't you interviewing more women? And the point's valid. It's a matter of, I've went out and tried to find female chefs, but your story is from start to where it is now is quite an amazing journey. And do you ever reflect on how you may be a role model to other women who may want to embrace what their dream is?
Wow, Dane, that's really that's very special, very kind words. I think that there is an emptiness in the industry of women who have of numbers of women. I agree with you. But if you look at each one of those women within the industry, at what they've deposited into the industry and what they've also contributed, they stand out in their own right anyway, even though we're few and far between. You look at Kylie, Christine, Stephanie, Maggie. Mm. You know, you look at Alex Herbert. Look at Gay Bilson, Joan Campbell. You look at all of those women and what they've put into the industry, and you see the same as the chefs, you know, same as the guys, blood, sweat and tears, you know, the reality of breaking even or making no money or making a loss. The willingness to actually do or believe in what I believe are the four key things in business and within the food industry, you need to believe in the four P's. So product. You're nothing without the product that you produce. To the second P, planning. Okay, if you don't know that you don't want to, you know, I've wrote on my first business card that I didn't really have, just a little bit of paper, you know, I want to be Australia's gluten-free Sara Lee. 13 years ago, I've still got that little bit of paper. This planning, you know. So product planning. Now, the next one is really important because I'm nothing without it. And that's passion. So you've really got to be passionate about what you do. But all of those three P's mean nothing without the fourth P, and that's persistence. And that's part of, for me, persistence is execution. So it's also the willingness to just keep doing it, keep believing. You are just going to persist and not like, you know, not like throwing a red rag to a bull all the time. It's just be persistent and consistent and believe in what you do.
Oh, you were talking earlier on when we were having breakfast this morning, you were saying that even some people sort of, you know, sort of imploring you to sort of just to let it go at times, but you still persisted in following that through to its to where we are today.
Yeah, and I have had a couple of opportunities in my life when Mum died and when, you know, when the business moved a couple of times, I would have, you know, ex-friends in corporate say, you know, throw it away, Ro. What are you doing in this crazy shit and living off bloody eggs and oranges for? You got to get out there, girl. And I was out there. And those people have come back with tails wagging between their legs saying, wow, you know, wow. Even when I go to the markets or, you know, I was at Channel 10 a couple of weeks ago and I'm sitting in the hair and makeup room and sitting there and then all of a sudden I turn around to my right and there's my ex-boss that made me redundant. And I said, wow, Robbie, what are you doing here? So it was very, very funny. So, yeah, it was really funny. Or I go to the markets. I went to the market and one of the directors of Mojo, because I used to work at Mojo Advertising, one of the board of management came up and said, oh, my wife has made you some strawberry jam. You know, we're so proud of you. So it's, it's nice.
What does the future hold for Rowie Dillon and Rowie's Cakes, do you think, just if you look forward from today? And what would you think would be the picture you would see?
So, we'll probably grow twofold within the next 18 months with the different projects that I've got. I'd like to take a month off. That'd be really special. Well, I don't know whether that'll happen or not. We've got a lot of projects in, because we're entering different sectors with savoury and stuff now, that, yeah, we will. We'll grow twofold within the next 18 months, but we're also... will have made massive inroads into the savoury sector of the market, and all of that is really helping the business achieve its Rowie's Cakes being a household name in Australia, you know, the old Sarah Lee from the freezer to the oven to the table vision. But in, you know, encompassing all of that is the fact that Rowie's Cakes is artisan. We're not Sara Lee kind of stuff. It is all handmade, and it will just keep growing and growing and growing until I run out of energy.
Firstly, I'd like to thank you for the time you've given me today. I've probably got you in trouble for the rest of your day with your schedule, but the journey's been an incredibly inspiring one, and I can imagine that it'll be interesting to see. You said you had another book coming out. When would that be? Yeah?
That'll be within the next 18 months.
Mm-hmm.
So, which will be awesome. So it's sort of, it is gluten-free, but it doesn't say gluten-free on the cover. So... but because I'm renowned for it sort of anyway, that's a really nice book. So I've got that, a couple of other different projects that I'm working on within the health sector as well as cake bake and sweets and stuff like that. So it's good.
Well, I was saying to you earlier that the greatest compliment I can give you is that I've been passing your product around to people who've tried it for the first time and not said a thing to them, and they've loved the product on its own, and then I've told them afterwards about how good it is for them, which has made it even better. But I mean, to me, that encompasses how successful you've been, that this product stands alone, whether you have an intolerance or whether you don't, but it has a point of quality that's very distinctive to it, and congratulations on achieving that.
Oh, thank you so much, Dane. Yeah, I'm really proud of what I do, and I remember when I first started Rowie's Cakes, somebody gave me a piece of advice and said, kiddo, you know, with the bloody sparkle in your eye, and the, you know, the smile in your cheeks, you're going to get there. But what you've got to do, kiddo, is along the way and when you get there and beyond that, always keep your feet on the ground and believe that you know what you're doing and that you're doing it the right way. Well, if it's any piece of advice for anybody out there, keep your feet on the ground and keep true to yourself anyway. So, yeah,
it works. That you have done very well. Okay, thank you, Roe, for sharing your time with me today, and I look forward to speaking to you again down the track.
Thanks.
Thank you.